Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Web Sleuth Radio, hosted on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Tricia Griffith. My co-host is wonderful, amazing Kimster from WebSleuth.com. And remember, Web Sleuth Radio, where we care about your family's health. Okay, that's not our slogan. We haven't come up with our just perfect slogan yet, but we are working on it. I just got in time to do the show. I had to run from the living room to the kitchen. Just about killed me, so I'm panting like a wild rabid animal. You'll have to forgive me. Got to let up on those 80 cheese enchiladas I like to eat on the weekend. They are slowing me down. Hey, it's time for Legalese Fun. The opinions expressed on Web Sleuth Radio are those of the hosts and guests, that would be me and our guests, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of WebSleuth.com, which is the website, which is a totally separate corporate entity, for goodness sake. Oh, my flippin' heck, as we say in Utah. Okay, let's just talk briefly about arrogance. When you think of someone who is arrogant, what do you think of? I think of a jerk in the store who thinks he has the right to butt in line, or a person who thinks others are here to serve him. You notice how I use the word him and not her? There's a reason for that. Arrogance is another way to describe a man named Steve Powell. That is Josh Powell's father. Josh's wife, Susan Cox Powell, disappeared almost a year ago after Josh decided to take his two young sons in the middle of the night, in a snowstorm, mind you, camping. Now, wait until you hear what Steve, Josh's dad, did to Susan Powell's father a couple of days ago. It is arrogance to the 10th degree. Plus, there's breaking news in the Susan Cox Powell case. Trust me, it is big time good stuff. We'll be talking with Cox family spokesperson Kirstie Hallowell in just a little bit. But first, I am so thrilled to have her back. I ask her every week to be on the show, and I'm just delighted when she can say yes. I call her the Iron Reporter, Beth Karas from In Session and HLN. That would be Headline News. Beth, welcome. How are you?
Well, thank you for having me back. I'm glad I could do this. I've been traveling so much that the times just didn't work out for me most weekends.
I know. I was afraid that you were thinking I was stalking you just every week. It was the same thing. It was like a parrot just repeating myself. Beth, you want to come on the show? If you have a question, you can certainly call in and talk to Beth at 760-825-0933. That's 760-825-0933. Beth, let's get right to it. We have a new segment on the show called What the Hell Is Casey Anthony Done Now? And you're the perfect person to fill us in on the latest on Casey Anthony. What's the scoop?
Well, at this point, an appellate court is deciding whether or not the trial judge, Judge Belvin Perry's order saying, you know what, she really does have to serve 1 year of probation. She is ordered back into the jurisdiction on late August, August 26th, 27th. And the defense is saying, wait a second, she served her probation and, you know, we think it's double jeopardy. So that's on appeal. And the appellate court just late last week asked for an expedited schedule in getting the record, getting the transcript of when she took a plea on January 25th, 2010, in front of the prior judge, Judge Stan Strickland, to the check fraud charges. I was there when she did that. She pled guilty to 13 felony counts, and the judge adjudicated her on six of them and then left the others, they're called withholds. Okay, so she's convicted of all 13 but sentenced on six. Mm-hmm. And what he gave her was time served, which was just over 400 days at that point, but he did say in unequivocal terms, she's to serve 1 year of supervised probation if acquitted of murder, you know, upon mm-hmm. her release. But those words, upon release, didn't make it into the order the way the clerk entered it, and the probation department had her serving it while she was in jail. That's kind of old news. But
right.
the new thing is that I've always thought that is ridiculous that she served probation in jail. And my colleague Jean Casares and I kind of argued the point before we knew details right after the acquittal and acquittal of murder. So Belvin Perry said he didn't like the fact that Jose Baez was aware of this and never
That's
brought it
thing,
to the court's
yeah.
attention. And so there's now this bar complaint filed against Jose Baez. There have been many over the years, but he's not been found in violation of anything. And they're mainly unsubstantiated, and a lot of details are not public. But we don't know who filed it. However, there is it could be just a fellow lawyer down in Florida who may have done it. So there's that. He says just the other day that he's not worried about that complaint, just like the 20 others. He may have been flip and calling the prior complaints against him 20, but there were a number. 20 is a little high. So we're just on a holding pattern, waiting for what the appellate court's going to do in the next few days. I would expect probably by Wednesday or so we'll hear.
So,
and she may have to come back to Florida, and that's what everyone's, you know, waiting for.
So we have to wait and see what the appellate court says before she actually has to come back to Florida, even though Judge Perry said she has to, right?
Well, that order is what's in effect. She has to come back if the appellate court hasn't decided by then.
Okay.
But because they asked at the end of the week, last week, for a schedule of each side, you know, responding and let's get us the minutes, it looks like they're going to have a decision quickly.
Good. Now, that's the thing that really bothered me. When I found out that Jose Baez, and I think a lot of people on WebSleuth.com have discussed this and feel the same way, when Jose Baez knew that language did not make it into the written order, and he let the probation department go through all of the motions to have Casey Anthony serve her probation in jail, which is just stupid, because the point of probation, if I'm not mistaken, one of the points is to make sure that you're, you know, when you are let out, you have probation, because they're letting you out a little early.
Well,
and so,
you're given a chance to live in the community,
yes,
and behave yourself. And just keep an eye and make sure. But it's to be served when you're out of jail, not in jail.
Exactly, and it's to be served to prove that you can live outside of a jail.
If the appellate court says, look, the state attorney's office was on notice of this too, and they could have done something. And in January of 2011, when both sides got a letter saying, you know, she's now completed her probation, no one did anything. The state attorney's office could have said, hey, hang on, what's going on? So I think the court isn't going to only lay this at the feet of Jose Baez being at fault, but why didn't the prosecutors also say something? Look, the reality is most people probably thought she was going to be convicted of murder.
That's it. They,
or something
they just,
under
they thought
that.
It was just extra paperwork. Why bother? She's going to be committed, don't you think? Or convicted, don't
convicted.
You think?
Yeah, I think that could be an explanation for everyone's inaction. Not Jose Baez's, but on the part of the state.
Well, sure, and that would make sense, because why in the world would you want to go through all that paperwork? You're trying to prepare for this big trial. It's so obvious that she's guilty, and you think, well, you know, that's just minor. We're not going to worry about it. And then, boom, it comes back just to hit you in the face like a bunch of cold water. And I can see how the appellate court can absolutely say, you know, Attorney General and the state of Florida, you could have done something too, and you chose not to. So, therefore, we always err on the side of the convicted, you know, of the person. She was found innocent of these charges. Although it is, Beth, come on. Have you ever heard of anybody ever wanting to, I mean, ever able to serve probation in jail?
No. This was a first for me. But when Chaney Mason told Jean Casares a couple days after the acquittal when she interviewed him that she has served the probation, and Jean reported it, she was sitting next to me, and I looked at her, and we were on air, and I said, well, that's ridiculous. I've never heard of such a thing. That can't be. You don't serve probation in jail. And she said, but that's what the lawyer told me. I mean, he told me that. And I was like, okay. So I spent quite a bit of time on the phone in the next 24 hours calling people I know, lawyers in Florida, in various cities, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, wherever, to say, have you ever heard of this? And they said, theoretically, it's possible when you're in on two separate cases. It's theoretically possible. They had heard of it. It's not supposed to be, though. And it was a first for me. And so I thought, okay, well, I mean, the check fraud, they all kind of related. It's not as though there was this check fraud case had not, it wasn't during the 31-day period like it had happened, I don't know, had been pending in the system from the time Kaylee was born, and it had nothing to do with the disappearance of Kaylee. When it's intertwined, you know, obviously with the facts of the case, and she committed those felonies while her child hadn't been reported missing. In any event, it's apparently theoretically possible in Florida. I've seen strange things in states, and and it's not totally unheard of.
Well, again, I think a key thing here, too, is Florida. Doesn't the weirdest stuff in the universe happen in Florida? Really, when you hear of somebody, you know, who kidnapped a squirrel and ate some live possum guts and then turned around and killed their mother-in-law, you just go, that happened in Florida. There's
well,
just no
I'll
question.
Tell you, Florida and Texas and California, yeah. God bless them, they all have some oddball cases. And maybe because they're big cases.
You know
Florida,
why?
I'm not sure. Florida's a cultural mix. That's all many states.
Let me tell you why, okay? I had a very brilliant person tell me this once. She was married to a preacher who lost his mind when he was in Florida. And she said, in Texas and in Florida, she lived both places, the heat makes people crazy. And I thought, that's as good as explanation of that as I've ever heard, because, man, there are just some wild stuff that comes out of both of those states. And I thought, that might as well could be. Maybe when you're colder, you're less likely to do something insane. I don't know.
Well, you're indoors.
Yeah,
you're indoors more when it's cold.
You're not running around.
Crime is different, and I just remember from crime statistics that crime's a little different in cold weather.
Exactly. Okay, so what is Casey Anthony doing now? Do we know where she's at? Is she in Florida? What's going on?
Do not know where she's at. Now, the defense has done a fabulous job of keeping her whereabouts under wraps. I mean, I think the TMZ photos a few weeks ago of a person, you know, in glasses and a hat. Remember those TMZ photos? They could be Casey's put on a couple of pounds. Could very well be Casey. I mean, when I looked at them, I didn't think it was, but a lot of people thought so. And, you know, maybe it is. Maybe she ate a lot and got a little fatter. But I really don't know. I mean, at one point we thought she was in Palm Springs and maybe even jumping over to the Bahamas at one point. I mean, I know she was negotiating a very highly paid interview with some people from Europe in the first days, like that first week or so, even around the time she was getting released from jail. And it fell through, and it would not have been conducted on U.S. soil, but that fell through. So
now, that's interesting. That's interesting. It would be the European markets, because they're probably the only ones that would pay her. And you know, because in U.S. there'd be too much of a backlash to have anybody pay her. I think that she wasn't those. Oh, go ahead.
Well, and you know how there was a story about Hustler magazine offering her $500,000 in the profits. Well, the Flint told me that they were approached by Casey Anthony's people.
No,
Flint
kidding.
Did not go to her.
Oh my gosh! And so they did. They make her the offer.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Casey's people, according to the Flints, and Larry's wife called me, said that Casey's people came to us and it came to their PR person, Flint Publications PR person, a woman I had lunch with over the, you know, in the spring before Casey's trial, when I was in L.A. when Connor and Murray's trial was supposed to go, and it didn't. And I was with Larry and his wife and the co-author of Larry's latest book, which I'm reading right now, which is a hoot about presidential politics and sex, going back to George Washington days. It's great. Anyway, so I was with their PR person and Larry's wife and the co-author. And that PR person is the one who was called by Casey's people and asked if there was any interest in a spread in Hustler magazine. And so Larry has gone public since. He in fact, the day that Liz Flint called me, Larry was going on Nancy Grace, I think, that night. It was the same day he went on Nancy Grace. And he said that men around the country had been approaching him saying, look, you know, she's good looking, she's a nice figure, you know, why don't you have her in the magazine? And so with people around the country, as Larry was on his book tour, approaching him about Casey, then the offer from Casey's people coming to him, you know, he extended an offer after that. When they reached out to him, though, is what Liz
that said. I find that very, very interesting, but not the least bit surprising. It doesn't surprise me that Casey would, you know, whip off her clothes and go, woohoo, here I am for $500,000. Okay, but then all of a sudden, they approach Hustler, but then they turn it down. Have they turned it down? Do we know what's going on with that?
You know what? I'm going to L.A. on Tuesday, And I intend to ask the Flints. I want to find out what happened, if it's still in the holding pattern or if they've turned it down or what. But Larry, according to what he has said publicly, thinks that she could make a lot more money than the $500,000 because he's offered 10% of the profit. So whatever, and he expects that the magazine would sell a lot more. It would be one of those special issues
right,
that people are going to be. So it would be flying off the newsstands. And he will give her 10% of the profit. So he said that he believes she could make a lot more than any interview.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me then one single bit if she was to declothe. Is that a word? Declothe? Decloth? Anyway, we do have a question from our chat room.
Okay.
And remember, you can come to blogtalkradio.com/websleuths and join us in the chat room. Frog wants to know if there is any word on Judge Perry's taking further actions on contempt charges against Baez, which Judge Perry mentioned in the trial. Have you heard any updates on that?
A lot of people have been asking me on Facebook about the contempt, and there hasn't been anything done publicly. And I got a call down there and asked Karen Levy, the court spokesperson, because he did leave it as a pending matter at the end of the trial. What I have seen many judges do is dismiss him. And, you know, they're just sort of hot and upset at the time, and they set it for after the trial, and then they calm down, and they're like, okay, you know, don't let it happen again kind of thing, and I suspect that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I will check, because I've just been so busy doing, and I'm getting ready to do Conrad Murray, so busy doing other things that one I forgot to check on the content.
Oh, my gosh. You should remember every single little thing.
I know, but I'm sorry.
You have 800 other trials.
I apologize to whoever wrote in with that, because I should know the answer to that.
No, my good heavens. You believe me. There's more in your mind than, you know, I could even begin to imagine. If you'd like to call in and ask Beth a question, now is your chance. You can call us at area code 760-825-0933. That's 760-825-0933. We're going to wrap up what in the hell has Casey Anthony done this time in just a little bit with a couple more questions. Actually, let's move on to her parents, George and Cindy. Now, George took the car, the famous car in which Kaylee's body was in, and had it salvaged, just crushed, basically. And now it's just scrap metal. What else is going on with the Anthonys that you have heard
of? Well, they are going to do Dr. Phil.
That's right. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
There's a big controversy over that. And what
is
the situation? Dr. Phil is going to donate money to their new charity. Is that it? I can't remember. I can't keep track. They've started a couple of charities.
I think there's going to be a donation, but I'm not positive about that. I mean, I'm not sure that he's paying them. I'm not up on all the details of that, so I apologize. But I do know that I'm getting a lot of people chatting on my Facebook page about boycotting any advertisers on Dr. Phil because
you know,
this. I mean, I could see, I understand. I've heard talk that people will do that or want to do that or suggested if Casey ends up doing an interview with a particular network, you know, in the U.S. or show. But her parents testified against her.
Granted, you know, Cindy Anthony is not going to get Mother of the Year, and you know, George Anthony has issues, but I don't think they need to be necessarily punished anymore, even though they certainly had made their share of mistakes and contributed to the situation. You know, first of all, I don't think it'll work, because there's not enough outrage against them, and so it won't work. And to be honest, I'm kind of curious as to what they're going to say. I would really like to hear George explain why he, of course he'll have to admit it, but I don't think he will. I'd like to, he lied about the affair, and that's obvious. But that is certainly a show that I will watch. If Casey was on it, I wouldn't. But George,
is that true?
And
you wouldn't? You wouldn't? Because I ask so many people that question, and they all say I'd have to watch. I mean,
you know, well, here's what I would do.
Watch.
This is really sneaky and even borderline sleazy. I wouldn't watch, but I might read the transcript. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Of course. A part of me would want to find out what she said, but it's just going to be lie after lie after lie, because that's what she does.
And the problem with interviewing George and Cindy, too, I mean, obviously people are going to watch this, and that's a big deal, but they've not had, to our knowledge, any or much contact with Casey, so it's not like they're going to have a whole lot of information.
Right, they're not going to have a whole lot to offer. So unless Dr. Phil kind of puts the hard questions to him, like, you know, Cindy, you lied about doing those computer
Correct.
Searches, you know, because he can be pretty blunt.
Right.
And so that in itself might be very, very interesting.
Yeah, so they're doing this interview to get on the hot seat and be challenged about misrepresentations on the stand, about the affair and about the computer searches. I don't know.
I think that show is going to be more interesting than anything Casey would have to say, because whatever she says, I can't believe. So that is definitely
Tricia?
One. Yes? Hello?
I just want to say that I'm not going to watch it either, but I am going to read what our members say about it on Web Sleuth. That's for sure.
Do you think the members will watch it?
I think some of them will, enough to be able to post about it and let the rest of us know. But I know a lot have said they're not going to.
This is George and Cindy or a future Casey interview?
George and Cindy on September 12th.
You know, I really think that would be an interesting interview. I really do. Hey, did I cut out there for a second, guys?
No, I'm here.
Okay, good. I just, I couldn't tell if I cut out. Sometimes I accidentally mute myself, which I know a lot of people would like me to do in real life, but I can't. So sometimes it just happens here on the radio. So it's September 12th. Dr. Phil, I think it's going to be a live interview. That's one way. If you don't want to watch it, come on websleuth.com and see what our members have to say about it. But, you know, say what you want about George and Cindy. It's, yeah, they're messed up and they added to it and all of that, but it's not the same as Casey. It's in my opinion, it just isn't. Okay, Beth, we'll definitely have you in for another update of what the hell has Casey Anthony done this time or now or whatever new title I happen to have for it. So we'll definitely keep you on the ball with that. Let's move on now. Warren Jeffs, the trial has wrapped up, but aren't there going to be more charges against him?
Yes. In fact, there are 12 different men in this polygamous community, the Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints, FLDS, in Texas. But they're also based in the Utah-Nevada border. And
mm-hmm.
they settled in Texas in 2003, 2004, some of them. Anyway, the Warren Jeffs was convicted of sexual assault of two of his 79 wives. They were children, 12 years old and 15. When they had sex with him, one of them, the 15-year-old, had a baby. The 12-year-old didn't, that anyone's aware of. The 12-year-old's father performed the marriage between Warren Jeffs and his little daughter, and he goes on trial tomorrow.
Is that Meryl Jessup?
Yes, that's Meryl Jessup.
Carolyn's
ex-husband, that's
Carolyn's
right.
ex-husband. Carolyn Jessup is a very strong woman. In fact, I invited her to come on websleuth.com, and because of this case, she is not able to, and I apologize.
She's a
witness. I'm not trying. She's a witness, but there's a specific reason why she's a witness, and I don't know if it'll be revealed later on down the road, but this was her ex-husband or her ex-owner, as she refers to him. He was brutal to her, and she wrote a book. And
right.
I would advise everyone to pick up the book by Carol Jessup about plural marriage if you think it's okay and cute and fun. Uh-uh. It's
a horrendous.
The book is called
Escape, right, and she was the fourth wife.
Yeah.
And she's in her early 40s now, and he's in his 70s. She was about 18, I think, when she married him. She had 8 children when she
mm-hmm.
escaped, with all 8 children.
All
her oldest
8.
Daughter, though, the number 2 in the order, but the oldest girl, is back at the FLDS. She didn't stay escaped, and so she's there in Texas.
That's tragic.
Yeah, but Carolyn has her 7 others, and one is a disabled, pretty severely disabled child.
And the good news about is it Carol or Carolyn?
Carolyn. Right.
Carolyn, that's right. The good news about Carolyn is she has found a wonderful man, her fiance. I've been in contact
right.
with him. Great guy, loves her, very stable, down to earth, just the perfect person for her after a horrendous ordeal like this. And hopefully Carolyn Jessup will be on our show sometime to talk about her book Escape and about plural marriage. But I'm glad to hear that Meryl Jessup, because he's an animal. That man is.
And Warren is now serving a life sentence. So
yeah, that,
life
and
plus
he'll,
20.
He'll never get out. He'll never get out.
I don't think Texas will let him out.
Oh,
there'll be
no.
an appeal, but it's pretty tough.
No, Texas. There is no way Texas. And thank goodness that Texas, you know, does come down hard on those type of people. Now, what about the women in Warren Jeffs' little little coven or whatever of the plural wives who participated in these rapes, are they going to go after them?
Well, it's a good question. I suppose they theoretically could, but there's no indication right now that they will. The Attorney General, it's his prosecution, he has told us at In Session in HLN that the cases are, I mean, the investigation continues to be open, and they will continue to develop evidence, and if they have enough, they will bring more charges. But right now, I don't think they're going to go after the wives. They can't get on the property without a search warrant. It's very different from the FLDS community in the Utah, Arizona border towns.
Mm-hmm.
It's collectively called Short Creek, which I visited just as the trial was beginning, because though there are public roads and parks going through those communities that anybody can venture out on, but not this compound in Texas. It's on entirely privately owned property bought by the church and surrounded by a big fence and guard towers, and they're totally self-sufficient. I flew over it in an airplane two weeks ago today, and they have a sewage treatment facility on the grounds. They grow their own vegetables, and I mean they come and they shop in San Angelo where I was, about 45 minutes away. They shop at Sam's Club and Walmart. The women in their prairie dresses, but they try to be as self-sufficient as possible.
Well, now, they have a new leader, though, correct? And supposedly he's a little bit more, he's not as crazy into pedophilia and all of that, or am I mistaken?
Well, there's a split right now. There's a lot of turmoil inside the church. And Warren's former spokesperson has been excommunicated by Warren, but he tells me he's not out of the church. His name is Willie Jessup. And Willie is working on another faction that wants to do things differently. But Warren Jeff's brothers, Lyle is the name of one of them who was at the trial, they're still running things under Warren's direction.
But oh, that's
now
scary.
Now that Warren's in state prison, it's going to be much harder to communicate and get communications out to and from. So there's a lot of turmoil, and I think we'll see some changes, but unclear whether or not they'll be significant or if the abuse will continue. There's a lot of abuse. It's not just sexual abuse and underage growth. It's physical. There's business crimes, welfare fraud. I mean, all these plural wives, they get our – I mean, we're supporting them.
Oh, it's the
same
way.
They get government benefits as single mothers.
Here in Utah, there's a lot of that as well, even in the Salt Lake and northern Utah areas. And what they do here is, and I spoke about this a few weeks ago, is they claim they're single wives and single mothers, and they don't know who the fathers are. And so they get all the welfare, everything, but then all the money is funneled to the men.
Yep.
And Utah, obviously, it's a place that it started. And it's believe me, it's at the top of the list here, trying to get it under control, if anything, for the children's sake, just to get the children out of those abusive relationships and abusive situations. And, you know, when I see that program, Sister Wives, you know, that's fine. I mean, you know, that looks great and the guy seems like all right and all of that. But that isn't how a lot of it is. You know, a lot of the polygamists, not all, but a lot of them are like Warren Jeffs, where it has a lot to do with pedophilia and a lot to do with control and a lot to do with keeping all of the women and the kids under the thumbs of a few men higher up. And it's very, very scary. So we'll definitely keep watch on that. And thank goodness Texas is the state that took on Warren Jeffs, because he needed to be brought off the street and put right into a jail cell. Let's talk about Aruba again. I can't believe we're talking about Aruba again. Robin Gardner, just give us a brief rundown of what happened and what's going on now and the suspects and all of that, my dear.
Robin Gardner, 35 years old, from Maryland, took a five-day trip to Aruba with a man she had known, met online for a year, but she'd been on again, off again with him because his name is Gary Giordano, because she had a boyfriend. And she'd actually talked about marrying her boyfriend, and the guy whose last name is Forrester. Well, she's, you know, seeing both guys. Anyway, she goes to Aruba with Giordano July 31st. It's supposed to be a five-day trip. On August 2nd, she disappears. All right? She's not been seen since 2 days, really just under 48 hours from arriving on the island. Giordano is being detained as of August 5th in Aruba as a suspect. He hasn't been charged with anything. There's an investigation that's ongoing. He has spoken to the police a number of times, but he will not answer questions that are repeat questions from something he's answered in an earlier interview. But he did say that they went snorkeling. Now, if you see a map of Aruba, it's kind of at a it's at a slant, the north end of it sort of pointing westward. They were down at the southeast end snorkeling. Not a very good place to snorkel, if indeed that's what they were doing, but he says she disappeared when they were snorkeling. She must have been just carried out into the Caribbean. He doesn't, and they were last seen at a restaurant at 4 o'clock. He doesn't report it till 6:30, and he's in dry clothes when he does. We don't know anything about rental of snorkeling equipment or if he brought his own. They're not disclosing it. But he did take out travel insurance, which had an accidental death benefit of $1.5 million.
Oh,
brother. Now, there are reports that on August 4th, when the investigation was continuing and he's still in Aruba, he called American Express, that's where the insurance was, to inquire about it. Now, there are reports about that. The police are not confirming it, but that he wanted to inquire about the death benefits, which is interesting. Not taking out travel insurance, a lot of people take it out, but making an inquiry while she's, you know, there's a search for her and he's still there is a little weird, if true. August 5th, he's leaving. That's around the time they're supposed to leave anyway. And there is a report also, and again, no one is confirming it, but I can't remember which outfit, and if it was ABC or AP reported it, that a ticket agent said, "Where's your travel companion?" And he said, "Oh, she's taking a different flight." Again, that's he almost got out of the country, but he got detained. He was through customs, and then he got detained. So, again, I'm repeating what's been reported because I don't have independent confirmation, but that's really suspicious if he said that and if he also made inquiries about the insurance. Now, they looked at a mine shaft where they found a pink shirt and some little thongs, some little shoes, flip-flops, but they were not hers. Because they were early, you know, like a week ago, people thought, oh, maybe she's down the mine. But that they said, no, they're not hers. We don't know how, why. Maybe it's a child's clothes. We're not sure. She sent a text or a posting to her Forrester, the boyfriend back home, his Facebook page, like the day before or early in the morning of the day she disappeared. This sucks. And also a text message about, you know, we'll work things out when I get back. The police did find very provocative photos of her and, you know, very sexual provocative photos of her on his phone. But, I mean, okay, so they had sex and he took pictures of it. I don't know what that proves. There are no reports right now of anyone hearing fights or anything like that, but the theory may be that he premeditated it. He also, women are coming forward in Maryland to say that he has a history of being a little rough with women, and there have been some restraining orders out on him. And there was a woman who says that he wanted to take her and her daughter, teenage daughter who's a model, to Aruba. And he said, don't worry, it's not going to be another Natalie Holloway. That's what she says.
Oh.
You
have to wonder if he planned this because he knew Aruba would just mess up the investigation and he'd get away with it and get the $1 million.
Supposedly he's never been there and says he didn't know too much about Aruba, but I don't know if that's what he says. So he's not necessarily the most credible person right now.
Well, that's true.
So,
listen, we do need to change topics. And Beth Karras, we're talking with Beth Karras from HLN and In Session. Beth, I want you to stay on the line because this is going to be an interesting story, and I would not be surprised if someday soon you are covering this story. On the phone with me right now, I have Kersey Hollowell. She is the Cox family spokesperson. And let me just welcome, first of all, Kersey. Thank you for joining us. I know how busy you are. Are you there, my dear?
Yes, I'm here. And it's Kersey, by the way.
Kiersey, I'm sorry. It's just been one of those days.
I also wanted to say that I'm not the Cox family spokesperson, but I am a good family friend, and I do handle most of the media in Utah.
Okay, thank you, my dear. Thanks for clearing that up. What this is about, in case there's people out there who don't know, Susan Powell went missing, and it happened to be the same time that her husband, Josh, decided in the middle of the night at midnight to take their two sons camping in a snowstorm. The whole thing is fishy. Let's face it, Josh Powell, Susan's husband, knows what's going on. But even creepier is Josh Powell is now living with his father, Steve, in Washington. And Steve Powell, Josh's dad, in my opinion, is a puppeteer of this whole thing. Now, the Salt Lake City Police, West Valley City Police, went out for a new lead in Ely, Nevada. And they invited the press to come along, and they are searching some mine shafts out there. There's a very strong lead, and you got to think that Steve and Josh Powell are nervous wrecks. Now, over the weekend, I talked to you early about arrogance, Steve Powell approached Susan Cox's father, who was standing on a corner handing out flyers saying, have you seen Susan Cox? Approached him and basically just treated him like garbage. How Mr. Cox was able not to just draw back and slug the guy, I don't know. Kiersey, tell us what's going on. What's the latest? Can you update us on what's happening with the search?
Well, as far as the Nevada case goes, the West Valley Police Department really didn't tell the media very much. They basically said, we invited you along to see a search. We wanted to get more interest in her case. We wanted to let you follow along with us. And they basically said that they cleared over a dozen mines. By saying they cleared them, they mean that they've gone down in them, they've taken photographs, they've gotten the GPS coordinates. On Saturday, which was yesterday, they searched about half a day. They visited an abandoned warehouse that had mine drilling samples in it, and they checked on some other areas. And then they said that they were very satisfied. They said the search was successful and that they might at some future point be back to Ely, but they did not say what they were hoping to accomplish or what they did accomplish.
Okay, thank you. This, I know, is a touchy subject because I understand tonight locally in the Salt Lake City area there is going to be breaking news on the Susan Powell case. But it's news that Web Sleuth members, websleuth.com, we've been discussing for a long time because we figured it out. And that is that Steve Powell, Josh's father, was a little odd toward Susan. And Kiersey, I don't know how much you can say about this. I don't want to put you in an uncomfortable position, but can you say anything, or can you maybe just elaborate a little bit on this?
Well, I am hopeful that a lot of news about this is going to come out tonight, and I don't want to break any agreements that I have with news stations about putting out their stories. But what I can say is that Steve, from the very beginning of knowing his daughter-in-law, Susan, had a very unnatural and unhealthy interest in her. And it was not something that you would ever imagine any father-in-law would feel toward his daughter-in-law. And I'm not sure how much more I can actually say right now, but there should be information coming out tonight, and then I should be free to talk about it after that.
Okay, thank you. We totally understand that. And like I mentioned before, Web Sleuth members, we were on this early on because there were certain things that were posted that we saw, some songs, if I'm not mistaken, that he wrote that made everybody just go, ooh, brother. And so tonight, finally, the media is going to report on this. I'm sure there'll be people coming forward to talk about it. So we'll watch the local media. Can you tell me what TV station it is?
It should be on KUTV, Channel 2. At 10
Channel
o'clock,
2.
I'm hoping.
Okay,
fingers
10
crossed.
O'clock. And I'm sure we can get that online. I'll definitely be watching tonight. Kiersey, is there anything you would like to add about what we can do on websleuth.com or perhaps people that aren't on WebSleuth? What can we do to help you help Susan and her family?
Well, we just held a really successful little campaign yesterday that we call the Honk and Wave, and we did this in Washington and in Utah, as you mentioned. And we did it. We stood outside for 4 hours with really big signs and asked people to honk to show their support that Susan's still out there. And here in West Valley, we didn't have Steve Powell coming to interrupt us. We had a really successful day, and even though it was very hot and it rained on us and everything, we had thousands of people drive by, and they would give thumbs up and they would shout out the window, "We hope you find her. Good luck. Prayers are with you." and it was just really successful. And so even though some people have criticized in the past and said that most of our searching is done online and that can't do any good, actually, in the last month, I've gotten several tips that have come in online. People say, well, I don't know if this is important, but I saw this. And so
absolutely.
Tips are still coming in. Tips are still coming in. So the more people can do to spread awareness, like to email people, to be on Twitter, to be on Facebook and to spread Susan's flyer, remind people she's missing. This is what she looks like. And if you know anything, call the police.
Well, thank you so much, my dear. Good luck tonight, and I will be talking to you soon. And if there's anything I can do or Web Sleuth Radio, websleuth.com can do, you have my number 24/7. Give me a call, and we'll do whatever you need us to do, okay?
Thank you so much for covering Susan's case. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, and I know you're busy. I know you're going crazy, so we're going to let you go, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. That's Kiersey Hollowell. She is she's friend of the family of Susan Cox Powell, and she does handle a lot of their media. So, Beth, now you hear the story, and let me tell you a little bit more about what happened on Saturday when Steve Powell, that's Josh Powell's father, approached Susan Powell's father. And they were doing the honk and wave, but they were doing it in Washington like they did here in West Valley. He interrupted it. He saw the news cameras. He came over. He interrupted it and started saying, Josh Powell, the police know they messed up the interview and that Josh, that Josh didn't have anything to do with it. And there's more to the story about why Susan left the family, because the family has got problems and she left because of the family, talking about the Cox family. Have you heard anything so rude and arrogant? I mean, in the middle of this man trying to raise awareness about his missing daughter, the prime suspect's dad comes over and starts blaming him.
That's terrible.
It's awful.
I didn't know the latest information until now, but I remember when this happened, and it just kind of fell off the radar, at least my radar, because there was no arrest. I'm not sensing from what Kiersey just said that it's an arrest. It's some development.
No, it's not. It is. I can tell you that it is absolutely not an arrest. But what it is information coming out about the Powell family that I am sure they're going to be up in arms about. And I'm sure this search in Ely has made them crazy. And that's why Steve Powell pretty much just went off the deep end attacking a poor man who was trying to raise awareness for his missing daughter. And this is going to make them go off the deep end even more, and that's good, because hopefully they'll make a mistake. Because let's face it, let's talk about this logically. You talk about Casey Anthony and having a lot of proof. This is the case, okay? Josh Powell goes camping at midnight in a snowstorm with his kids.
And how old were the children at that
time? I think like 2 and 4.
Yeah.
And a tent. Okay, snowstorm, tent, December. And goes camping, and then all of a sudden his wife is missing. Oh, and he forgets to go to work on Monday because he thought Monday was Sunday. Also, there are reports that a few days before his wife went missing, he went into a garden shop, a home gardening center, and bought a bolt of shrink wrap. And that shrink wrap is nowhere to be found. There was a big, huge wet spot on the floor that when the police went there, he had fans on, that he was drying. Now, the police have cut that piece of flooring up. We haven't heard anything, so if it was a lot of blood, I think we would have heard. I don't think it was blood. There are rumors that it was vomit, perhaps she was drugged, perhaps she just, who knows, because who knows what happened. But she was getting ready to leave him. And as we know, that is the most dangerous time when a woman is in an abusive relationship, is when they are getting ready to leave, because they'll do anything to stop them. Josh's family, they're nuts. They put up this website that talked about how great Josh was to Susan. Not anything really about Susan, just about how great Josh was to Susan. I think they finally took it down.
Was there a history of police calls of domestic violence?
No, not that I'm aware of. No, she was a very, very religious LDS woman. So was Josh. But she was the bread earner. She was the one that kept the family together but she was getting to leave. She was getting ready to leave him because he was so controlling and just so awful. And in my opinion, from what I have read, Steve, the dad, is the puppeteer of this whole family here. And as soon as Susan goes missing, Steve takes the boys and heads up to Washington to live with Dad. Now, I know the police have not been in to search that home, from what I understand, and anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, that Steve will not allow them to search the home, which to me is another weird thing. Josh has done nothing to find Susan. Josh just says she just left. Gosh, she came home from this, you know, spur-of-the-moment camping trip, and she was gone. Yeah, and she was getting ready to leave and divorce him, too. But tonight, Channel 2, for those local, that's KUTV, to go online. Hopefully it'll be on tonight. It is going to be earth-shattering, and just it will creep you out to know Ann. But like I said, Web Sleuth members, we know about this situation with Steve and how Susan felt about Steve, her father-in-law. We've been on this for a long time. Okay, you know
now,
what, we're going to make...
Oh, I'm sorry. I just have one other thing.
Yes,
Christy,
please.
Said that the authorities considered the search of the mines in Ely to be successful.
That
so
I,
what does that mean? To be successful means they got something.
They got something, or think about it this way. Again, I have nothing to base this on other than my brain, which is questionable at times. Or it caused somebody to behave a certain way. And it helped them in that way.
I see. Okay.
Okay. So it could be one or the other. Maybe they did find something. Wouldn't surprise me. Because, boy, you know, they. I checked the round trip from Ely, Nevada to here, and it's 400 miles. And I can't remember if he had 200 miles or 400 miles on his car. But, you know, who's to say that he didn't have help afterwards to dispose of Susan?
Right.
You know,
right.
Somebody could have helped him. And, you know, and Dad sure does control his little boy, as we have seen, in my opinion. Remember, please, the opinions on this show are mine and not yours. So there, get over it. Don't get mad at me. Okay, Beth, we're going to wrap it up a little bit early today. It's just been a wild, crazy day here in the Griffith household. But, Beth, we adore you so much. We just think you're the greatest. And like I said, years ago, I was going to give you an award. I had put together this award to give to you because you had did so much during the Scott Peterson trial that it was amazing. And someday we're going to give you that award because you are certainly the one that we go to you don't have the hysterical headlines and all the you know, titillating information that turns out to be false. You have the facts, but you deliver it in a way that is compelling. So on behalf of Web Sleuths, thank you. For doing that,
thank
we
you.
Need more reporters like you.
So tune in to the Conrad Murray trial. That's where I'll be spending my fall in L.A.
And that is that's Michael Jackson's doctor, and so that
correct.
Is going to be a fascinating case as well. Thank you so much, Kimster. Are you there, my darling?
Yes, and I'm sorry that we have to say goodbye to Beth, but I hope you'll come back.
We'll do
she
it
will.
Again for sure.
Because
okay.
I'll be asking her just like a parrot over and over, can you be on the show? Can you be on the show? Can you be on the show? So she'll be here, trust me. Kimster, thank you again for doing all the work and letting me take in, you know, all the glory of this. Thank you for your behind-the-scenes help. I truly appreciate it. Web Sleuth members, will be uploading this show shortly after we finish up here. So in case you want to hear it again or you want to pass it on to somebody, you can do so. And, of course, you can always go to websleuths.com to get all the information on the latest true crime cases. And next week's show, listen carefully. This is going to be fantastic. We have been asked, Web Sleuth has been asked, to help with a case of wrongful conviction. You know, the three people that were just released a few days ago, WM3, this case is just as obvious, if not more so, than that case, okay? It is a case of a woman who was wrongly convicted of killing a man, and when you hear how this conviction went down, you will be outraged. Web Sleuth has been specifically asked to help uncover facts, just to take what we have, what they have available. They're going to give it to us, and we are going to pick it apart, and we're going to help this woman. We're going to help her get out of jail because she does not deserve to be there. And we'll have all the details next week on Web Sleuths Radio, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It's Web Sleuths Radio, where we discuss current events, true crime, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.